Welcome to The Local Take with Kiplin Primus on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. This weekly public affairs program features dialogue and community engagement with leaders and organizations making a difference in the areas we serve.
Good morning, good people. I'm Kiplin Primus, your host for The Local Take on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. And we've been talking about COVID and Black Lives Matter and repatriating to other countries. And today I thought I would take us a little bit farther. I am speaking once again to Gary Golio. He is an award-winning children's author, and his latest book is about Blind Willie Johnson, and it is called Dark Was the Night. So, Gary, welcome back to The Local Take.
Oh, thank you so much, Kiplin. It's great to hear your voice.
Well, I was so happy when I was reading this story because it takes you away from everything that's going on our planet. And it is the recording of Blind Willie Johnson called Dark Was the Night, and it is included in a collection of recordings that was sent into space in 1977 on Voyager 1 on a golden record. And the recording is Blind Willie Johnson using his pocket knife to make the guitar sound almost human. And, you know, as I was reading the book, it seemed almost impossible to believe that Blind Willie Johnson, a Black child born in Texas in 1897, is included as a representation of the planet to the interstellar community that will, we all hope one day will receive this gift from us.
Yes,
I think
yes.
That's an amazing story.
I think it's a miracle, personally. And to go, you know, to add to what you said, I mean, born in a very small rural area in southern Texas, and had nothing as a child except a supportive family and a beautiful voice that was gifted to him. And he became blind at a very early age, probably 7 or 8, became a street singer, sang in churches, and what he always thought he was singing was gospel. And it is gospel. It's really beautifully heartfelt, spiritual song. But everybody else realized that it was also the blues. And this man died kind of a sad death after his home was burned and was forgotten. And the miracle, I think, is that, like you said, this amazing, haunting song, which reaches into the depths of any human's heart, really, ended up on this amazing space probe in outer space.
It is an amazing story. Gary, this is the second time we've spoken to you
yes.
about these fabulous children's picture books that you've done. The last time it was Strange Fruit with Billie Holiday, which was a beautiful book. You know, this is clearly your assignment in life. But, you know, why you? Why these stories? You know, why these stories for children? What has drawn you to these, you know, forgotten, sometimes forgotten legends in African-American history?
Well, I think you're going to have to ask the universe that, although, I mean, I can sort of give you some hints. I think Willie, one of the beauties of Willie's life, for example, is that it's about the magic and mystery of being a human being on this planet and all the things that shape us and make us who we are. They're very subtle things. Sometimes it's something dramatic. It might be the loss of one of your parents that changes your life, or in my case, it was my mother's mother, my grandmother that I grew up with. And as a boy, she had come from Italy, but she spoke, by the time I knew her, she was probably around 60. You would not know. She had no accent. She spoke beautiful English. She was very, very keen on education and me getting a good education. And we used to sit and watch TV together. And what we watched, and this reflected her very wide-open approach to music and art, was I remember seeing Louis Armstrong and Ella Fitzgerald and Pearl Bailey and all these amazing black performers when I was like 5 and 6 years old. And that goes really deep into me. And I also feel, you know, a lot of the people in my family had difficulties. They were immigrants. They didn't graduate from high school, even many of them. They went through the war. My father was in the Navy for 6 years fighting in the Pacific in World War II. And so the idea of somebody being forgotten, as you alluded to, you know, Willie is not forgotten. I mean, all the people who have covered his songs range from Eric Clapton to Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin to Nina Simone to Peter, Paul, and Mary. I mean, it goes on and on. So it's not like I've discovered him, but I thought his story would be perfect for children because what it says is you never know who you're going to influence even after you've left this earth and who you're going to affect, because people talk about Willie's music and they say that it's soul stirring. And I think it gives me the chills in a good way when I listen to Dark Was the Night, which everyone should listen to.
Me.
I am speaking once again to Gary Golio. He is an award-winning children's author, and his latest book is about Blind Willie Johnson, and it is called Dark Was the Night.
His moaning and his humming is so beautiful, and why me? Because nobody else had done it. That's why.
Well, I'm glad that you're doing it. And although Blind Willie Johnson was known and his name is known, his story really wasn't known. Again, yeah. A black child born in 1897, you know, no one is keeping records of you. You know, the census, maybe. So how did you find this story? How did you research? How did you learn, you know, that he went blind so early?
Well, two of the, you know, there's a man named Samuel Charters, who was a very famous music historian and researcher, and he loved Willie Johnson. In the 50s, he actually came upon one of Willie's wives and the woman who had sung with him on some records. And all of this research, there's been a lot of research done. Only in the last, like, maybe 15 years, 20 years, people found his death certificate. They found his World War I registration card. There were some census records that told us where he was living at different times. And, you know, he's almost like an enigma, but there's enough that we know about him that keeps the mystery alive and yet doesn't make him kind of commonplace. And I'd known about the music, but when I read these two articles by both of these men are Texas journalists. Michael Corcoran and Michael Hall wrote these long articles about all that we know about Willie Johnson in the last 10 or 15 years. And I was so moved by how all these people spent years and years of their lives going to these little county courthouses and town halls and record offices, looking at microfilm and census records, trying to find out what it was. They were sort of looking for, like, the Holy Grail, like what they were trying to figure out, the secret,
the magic
to Willie Johnson. Exactly. And the magic, I don't think, is found in any courthouses or public records offices. It's found in listening to Willie's voice and the qualities of soul. I mean, I think it's no accident that Nina Simone recorded a version of Nobody's, which is one of his most beautiful songs, with, as you said, his pocket knife playing slide guitar. And for her to do one of his songs, I feel like she and he could have done like a cosmic duet together. You know, they both have those qualities of soul, and all you have to do is listen to the music. But I thought that kids would really get, you know, tickled by the mystery of his life and how this poor, blind, black man, born into a rural, poor area and dying in poverty, really, ended up being highlighted. And obviously, Carl Sagan and Alan Lomax, who helped him put these things on the record, thought that Willie had something very special to offer, not just humanity, but the rest
the
of
universe.
The universe. Right, that's right.
So you mentioned that the song, Dark Was the Night, it captures the loneliness of the human spirit.
Yeah.
You know, humans are social, even introverts, you know, have some social activity. And the pandemic has just shut all of that down. And has really brought that loneliness to the forefront, because you can be alone in a house full of people.
Yes, yes.
So why do you think Carl Sagan and Lomax thought it was important to include that aspect of humanity as part of this interstellar communication?
Well, I think it's directly connected to what they were doing, sending this space probe that Jimmy Carter, who was the president at the time, wrote, you know, this introduction for. they were sending this little speck of technology, this little vessel, out into the ocean of space. And we don't know if there's anybody out there or anybody that we could communicate with. And here we are in the vastness of this entire universe, in the ocean and the darkness of space, this planet, this beautiful little blue and white planet. But in a way, it's a very lonely place to be, especially if we are the only, you know, people of any kind in the universe, which I don't believe, but I think that it sparked a lot of ideas. I mean, Alan Lomax said that Willie's song was the, you know, expressed the embodiment, or it was the embodiment of human loneliness. And I think all people at some time in their life, some more than others, feel a sense of aloneness. We're in these physical, fleshy bodies. We can touch other people. We can talk to other people. We can laugh and cry. But we are, and I don't mean this in a sad way, really, but we're sort of trapped in these little vessels that we move around in. And so, to me, I see that as there's Willie's song in this little vessel being sent out into the far reaches of the universe. And I don't know, maybe that golden record is a little lonely on that spaceship. I don't know, you know?
I know. And could you give us, what was that title of Nina Simone's song again that she did?
It's a cover of Willie's original song, and all these songs are Willie's songs. It's called, sometimes it has the "it's" in front of it, but "Nobody's Fault But Mine." And what it's about, and it has some of the most beautiful, in fact, it was Eric Clapton who said, "You won't find," I'm paraphrasing, "you won't find any better slide guitar playing than on that song." And it's, what he's saying in the song is his mother taught him to read the Bible, and his sister taught him to read the Bible, and his father taught him to read the Bible. And what they were saying was, this is one place where you'll find, wisdom and some kind of a roadmap for how to lead your life. And if you don't make the effort to figure it out, it's nobody's fault but yours. So Willie's saying, if I don't make the effort to be a good human being, to try to embody the spiritual lessons that I've learned, then it's nobody's fault but mine if things don't turn out too well for me. So he was a very spiritual guy, and I think he had a lot of heart feeling, you know.
That is the ultimate in adulting, taking responsibility for your actions.
Boy, if that isn't a comment on our times, yes.
Gary, I want to thank you. I want to thank you so much for this story and this book, and it's wonderful. Dark Was the Night, the story of Blind Willie Johnson. Thank you.
Thank you, Kiplin. It's always a pleasure. Keep up the great work.
I'm Kiplin Primus, your host for The Local Take on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. And this morning we've been talking with Gary Golio about his new book entitled Dark Was the Night, about Blind Willie Johnson. And this is a children's picture book. And we are lucky enough to also get a chance to talk with the illustrator, E.B. Lewis. E.B. Lewis, welcome to The Local Take.
Oh, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Now, when you were asked to illustrate this story, were you familiar with Blind Willie Johnson? Did you know who he was? Were you familiar with his music?
I was not. I had no idea. Unfortunately, did not know him or his music. I knew one of his songs, though. It was a piece that he wrote for Nina Simone. Well, Nina Simone sings it. And I had no idea until this recently that actually it was a piece by Blind Willie Johnson. So prior to the project, I had no idea, which was fascinating. But that often happens, that I learn a lot about the subject because of having to go and indulge into the research. And this was a fascinating research for me.
I can imagine, because to me, your illustrations do capture so much of the story. And you know, some of the illustrations are across the two pages in the fold, so to speak, but they seem to represent this vastness, you know, this hugeness, which, you know, I could imagine being the universe. And I wondered, how do you do that to tell a story? You mentioned doing research.
Well, the thing is, I'm glad that you noticed that, because that's what's supposed to happen. As an illustrator, I think we confuse it with a number of things when we think about illustration. We think about the commercial entity of illustration, doing brochures and things that are associated with
merchandising, products.
And things like that, merchandises and things like that. But in children's book illustration, it's a little different monster there, it's a little different entity. It's basically a language, and I look at it as basically telling the story, the same exact story, but from a different language. And the language that I happen to master is the visual language. So I'm a visual storyteller. So what happens is that the image, I get the manuscript, I read the manuscript, and then what I do is then I reinterpret, not reinterpret, but reimagine it to make it fuller, to make it the story, to fill in the areas where the author did not or could not actually fill in. So I will add a character. For example, there's a cat in the first page, where the second page, where the mother and the baby is there. It is a mention of a cat in the story, but I place them, I put the cat in there, so it actually gives it more, makes it more familiar for the children to see an animal, you know, and then it makes you question, well, did he own the cat? Was it a feral cat? What about this cat? So it actually adds more flavor, if you will, to the images. And I'm doing that all the time. And it's the same thing that a director of a movie gets a screenplay and says, I love this movie. You know, I love this screenplay. I love this book, the story. And he takes it and does his own thing to it. And so after you've read the book and you look at the movie, oftentimes you say, well, it's different than the book. And it's different in the book because the director saw something else and wanted to bring another element out that might not necessarily be put in the story. And so that's what I'm doing with the story of the Blind Willie Johnson. I'm adding flavors to it that might not be added from the author.
I think that is exactly what I was thinking as you were talking. I was thinking about cooking. You're adding the spices. You're adding the depth of flavor, so to speak.
Yes.
The other thing...
And those, I mean, he's adding the potatoes and, you know, and a piece of the turkey. But, you know, the potatoes and turkey really need, sometimes need to be smoked. You know, they need some thyme, you know, some rosemary. Those elements are not mentioned, but they are definitely make the dish much more delicious, doesn't it?
It does. And even in listening to what you're saying, I could probably look at the pictures and know the story, or even tell a different story, because the pictures are so beautiful and so broad. You know, the picture of the train with the truck on the road, it's just all so very beautiful, honest and truthfully.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It was a joy to do the story, the project, especially doing the research and finding out where he lived and having to go. And at this particular time, when I wrote to him, I illustrated this book, I was unable to go to Alabama to find out. But I could do enough of it within the library research, and which you can get online and Google images and things like that to get a sense of what was like back in the 20s in, say, Tennessee or Alabama or wherever it is, or farm land in the Midwest. So I needed to have all those elements, too, to add to my pot, since we're talking about cooking. And then... then finding the characters. The characters he's passed on. And also that character does not exist. And there were very few images of Blind Willie Johnson when he was alive. Very few images. So I had to get a sense of who this man was, who this boy was, you know, the love of music. But the story is far, it's about that, and it's about the love of music. But it's also, it's a sad story in a sense. You know, it's a story about a child losing his sight, you know, as a child. And so what the devastation of that? And then how do you do that and tell that sad story, but without being a sad story?
Mm-hmm.
So that's my job. My job is to add the color, add the breath, add the atmosphere, the nuances. So if I did a book on, say, another book of mine, coming on home soon, about a little girl and his parents. One parent during the war, during the 40s, father's in the war, World War II. Mom needs to work, needs to bring money into the household, so she goes, gets a job on a train in Chicago. She lives in Tennessee with her grandma. She's there with grandma. And so that story is about emotions and about tenderness and about intimate settings. You know, the intimacy of it all, her anticipation of mom and dad returning home. So if you look at that story, you'll see the little intimate setting, where she's drinking hot cocoa, and this little, you'll see the cup and the spoon and the little biscuit with it. So, and that's all the intimate side of it, and that's what I want to tell. That's the story that I want to tell. In this story, I'm Willie Johnson. It's about atmosphere. It's about color, and I'm imagining, and I can't, what it would be like to be blind. But for a child who has had sight at one time, no color. And so when color is mentioned to him, when someone says red, I imagine that red would be even more vivid.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why these colors in this book are far greater than any of the colors I've ever used. I actually went out to buy new color because I didn't even have these colors in my palette. And this color called opera. It's a brilliant, beautiful color. And it's a reddish color, reddish-orange color, gorgeous. Lavender, you know, periwinkle. I didn't have those colors in my palette. But I knew I wanted to tell this story, that story, with color and atmosphere.
And you mentioned the intimacy in the other book. And one of the things for me in this story, to me, you captured the vastness of the planet, the vastness of the world. You know, you captured those images that kind of make humans look small. And I wondered for yourself personally, how did it feel to know that this young black child born in 1897 in rural Texas has a recording that is a welcome to the interstellar universe?
Yeah, God. You know, it's children... I do a thing, I have a piece of art that I do. It's called Lotto Icons, and it's about the enormity of being alive, the enormity of just being human. And that and children will surprise you every moment, you know, what can possibly happen when you just give them the attention and the access that they need. And so that's what this book is about, you know, someone, father, you know, giving him his little guitar, making a little guitar for him, you know, and taking that little guitar and look what that little guitar ended up becoming, you know, this guitar that is, and as you mentioned, he's now in space, you know, representing this young black kid from rural Tennessee. I said Alabama, but I meant Tennessee. Texas.
Yeah.
Rural Texas. Yes, rural Texas. I got a whole bunch of stories in my head right now. And so, rural Texas, you know, that never in a million years would ever imagine being a example of what sounds are on Earth for, you know, an alien. I mean, that's just, you know, unthinkable. You know, it's just so much, a beautiful, so many things beautiful about that.
It
makes it a really beautiful story.
It's a story
about possibilities.
It is a great story, and I can't help but imagine, like, as one of your pictures showed, you know, this spaceship Voyager out there in the vastness of space with Blind Willie Johnson's, you know, Dark Was the Night. Now, did you listen?
Right next to Beethoven.
Right next to Beethoven.
Right next to Beethoven.
Yeah.
That's right. Right next to Beethoven.
So yeah. You mentioned hearing the music. Did you listen to it while you were drawing?
Over and over and over again. You know, it's when I'm working on a piece of art and it's a piece that I'm working, say, when I did Langston Hughes, I did a book, Langston Hughes' story, a poem, The Negro Speaks of Rivers. I listened to work songs. Harry Belafonte did an amazing compilation of work songs. And so I listened to that over and over and over again, because that information goes, it feeds in, it leaches into the soul, into the spirit. And so then it comes out, because I feel that I'm working through the Creator. And so I need all the elements that I can possibly get, that kind of divine intervention, if you will, to bring all that in. You know, you fill yourself up with grace and gratitude, and you give it all back. And that's what this is, and that's what the process is for me. I come into my studio, my favorite place in all the world, and I sit down and I put on what I need to, you know, kind of surround myself with in terms of music and books and all those things that are necessary for this project. And then I immerse myself. And then at the end, you have a product, something that hopefully children and adults alike will be filled, you know, nourished.
I think you can feel the music in the book. I read the book the first time without the music. And then the second time when I sat down to go through the story again, I played the music, just as you said, on a loop. I had to keep going back to, you know, hit replay.
Oh, that piece is haunting, isn't it?
Oh, my God.
It is so moving.
The spirit in that music is so very strong, and he doesn't say a word. That it is an amazing piece of music.
Not a word. Yeah.
Dark was the night.
The power, you know, the power of art.
Yeah,
the power of music, man. It's an amazing thing, and it's why we need to have, you know, to get our children, you know, as much as we can possibly access them, get them the experiences and exposure. It's about exposure, you know, to get them exposed to as many things as we can possibly get them, and it's going to make the world a richer place.
Well, E.B. Lewis, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today about Blind Willie Johnson's book, Dark Was the Night. How can our listeners, you know, stay in touch with you?
By my website, eblewis.com. And basically, on that, you will see the various galleries that I'm represented by. You can go up to a museum. I was asked to do by a group out of Boston who designed the African-American Museum in D.C. They designed the museum there, and then they designed museum in Niagara Falls, and they contacted me to do all the paintings in the entire museum, and it's the paintings of the escapes. This is where Harriet Tubman and various others, this was a point of departure into Canada, and so Amtrak built a brand new train station there to the sum of like $42 million, and there was an old custom house there that they attached to it, and they decided to turn this custom house into a museum. And there you'll find my work. And now I've been asked by the Smithsonian to do Monticello. So I'm actually working on the project of telling the true story of Thomas Jefferson and his slaves. So the that story will be told now. So they've hired me. I'm working with the archaeologist, anthropologist, art historian at the Smithsonian, working on the telling of the truth of Thomas Jefferson and the slaves he had out there in Poplar Forest.
We'll have to have you back to hear more about that, E.B. Lewis. Thank you so much for this morning.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
The Local Take with Kiplin Primus on Jazz 91.9 WCLK is produced by Kiplin Primus, Jami Wellman, and Rob Maynard for WCLK. If you have comments about today's program or suggestions for future programs, you can leave a voicemail at 404-880-6211 or email kiplinprimus@gmail.com. You can listen to these interviews on demand at WCLK.com or via the WCLK app. Thanks for listening.